Hello, everyone. My name is Lewis, and today we have a special podcast. This is podcast number 80. This is American Idioms and Slang, and this is where we look at the origin of idioms and slang. But today we have our third interview with, today's interview is with Vice Dean Professor Liu Bin, and he's sitting here in his office in the Yuchuanlu campus, and we're going to discuss. We're going to have a nice interview about education, and Vice Dean Professor Liu Bin. Can I call you Professor Liu Bin?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Professor. I think I'll keep it like this. First, I'd like to know something about yourself, and I think our listeners would like to know something about you. Can you tell us something about your background, your education, hometown, and or your family?
Okay, I'm from Inner Mongolia, and the capital city of Inner Mongolia, Huhot, and I had my primary school years and middle school years. And then I was admitted to the Yunnan University, and then I went to the GUKAS, the graduate school of it was called the Graduate School of the Chinese Academy of Sciences at that time. Of course, our institute has changed its name in the year 2000. I studied English language and literature at the university, and then I studied linguistics and applied linguistics in the GUCAS, and my special interest in phonetics and phonology. And my family, my own family, is now here in Beijing. My wife and my daughter, three of us, and my parents and my brothers and sisters are still living in Huhot. So that's pretty much about myself.
And you mentioned phonetics and phonology. Can you explain to our listeners a little bit what those words mean and how are they different?
Well, this is kind of a technical terms, and they are two branches of linguistics. Phonetics mainly deals with the physical properties of sounds, human speech, basically. And phonology talks about the pattern of sounds. By patterns, we mean the sound inventory of language and the rules for changing and for different orders, things like that. I don't want to elaborate on that, but yeah.
And those are part of linguistics.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so I understand that you have traveled abroad to do some studying, and could you talk a little bit about that and or something about the education in that university in that country, and how is it similar or different than education in China, or at least at the university level?
Well, thank you for the question. I remembered a few years ago, another foreign teacher asked me the same question, asking about the difference between the education situation in Western countries and in China. It went back to 2000, to the year 2000, actually 1999, and I had the chance to go to the United States, Kansas University, as a visiting scholar, and I went to the linguistic department and followed the professor, young man. He is a linguist. He studies for phonetics. I learned a lot about phonetics and phonology from him. I stayed there for 6 months. Unfortunately, when they were starting to talk about how to do experiments on the by means of the computer software, things like that, and I had to come back But anyway, that was quite fruitful trip. I think that there's a lot of difference between the education systems and the understanding of education between the people of these two countries. One thing I felt deeply about the American education, at least as far as that university is concerned, is that the institute is well established. And I mean, they have different departments, and inside the linguistic department, they have a lot of different directions. And for example, take that Kansas University, KU, as an example. They have 10 professors, and these 10 professors had 10 different directions, say psycholinguistics, historical linguistics. Whereas in China, even though a lot of universities have their own linguistic departments, but they basically, I mean, they're not complete. They might have a few very strong researchers and leading the research in that field, ignoring some other branches. But I feel that their structure is quite complete, so that the professors can do their own research in their own field. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they can cooperate, you know, to find something interesting and in the interdisciplinary fields. Mm-hmm. And I would like to put it into a metaphor. So their research structure is like octopus with their tentacles stretching to all different directions. Mm. And ours is like, you know, I don't know how to put it, and maybe
an octopus with fewer tentacles.
Yeah, fewer tentacles, maybe. So we maybe the research in our country, research work, and even teaching, has kind of quite clear purpose. Maybe sometimes too clear, not. Understanding that research is a thing that takes a lot of time, and you have to calm down and do it, you know, like it's quite tedious thing, and you have to take a long time and think over the problems. Mm-hmm. And teachers and researchers have to have to take their time, and then they have their own direction. Mm-hmm. But here we all have a very strong purpose. It seems that we have to do something and we get something in a limited amount of time. Mm. So therefore, you know, like I begin to doubt whether the research results or anything will be reliable, because you can't get good results from hasty work.
Mm. Okay, and I understand you are you have two hats. In this university, you have one hat as vice dean of the foreign language department, and then you have another hat as a professor of linguistics. Is that right?
Yes.
And could you talk about those two different hats a little bit? And I'm more interested about your professorship of linguistics and any what is your role as professor? How do you approach your teaching of each class?
Well, speaking about the professorship, and I think and people might have a little bit of a misunderstanding or misconception of the teachers here at UCAS, because the reason for our existence here, the Department of Linguistics and Department of Foreign Languages, is that we need to provide English teaching service, maybe, to the students of non-English majors, basically science students. So our major job is to teach them to improve their English, mainly into two fields, or actually in all the four skills, in speaking, writing, reading, and translation, and all these skills. So most of our time has been spent on these things. And we only devote one third of our time to research and teaching in our own field. And we have a little in linguistic program, and each year we have 10 students only, which is much smaller than programs in other universities. But I think, and still, we have to do research in linguistics, because I don't have to talk about the reason we have to do it, but with difficulty.
Mm-hmm. Well, can I ask you? You said that your students are required to do research, or that the professor is required to do research.
The professors are required to do research.
Oh, I see. And so, as a linguistics professor, could you talk a little bit about how do you approach teaching that kind of class? I mean, what kind of methods do you use to teach linguistics?
Well, teaching linguistics students, it's like teaching any content course, which is different from a language course. And we have to be updated with the latest development in the field. In my case, it's the phonetics. Because although the course I'm teaching is phonetics and phonology, you know, in most other places, and these are two separate courses, and because our students are overloaded, so we can't provide another course. We just put these two subjects together. So I have to spend, to combine these two courses together in usually 18 weeks. I start with the phonetics, of course. That's kind of logical, because phonology is based on phonetics. I spend about one third of the time on the phonetics theories and the basic concepts and place of articulation and manners of articulation, things like that. And that's kind of a traditional part. And then I spend some time on the experimental phonetics, which is mainly done under the help of the computer softwares like Pratt, which is quite popular internationally. But unfortunately, as I told you earlier, I did not have a chance to study how to use these softwares systematically, so I just learn a little bit by myself and do some kind of simple analysis. Then we talk about the acoustic phonetics. That's the second part, the experimental one. And after that, I still have about 5 weeks, and then use that time to talk about phonology. Now, you know, there are so many profound theories in the field of phonology, and we have to concentrate on the very basic and mainstream theories, like the OT theory, which is optimality theory, and things like that.
Okay, well, it sounds like you've got your hands full with those courses. Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask you, what do you think, in your opinion, are the qualities of a good English teacher, especially for science majors?
As the English teacher.
Yeah, right. What do you think makes a good English teacher in the university level?
Well, I think I've been thinking about this, and I don't have a fixed answer. At one time, I'm thinking, all right, now that I'm a teacher of the science students, and I have to know something about science. But actually, that's easier said than done. You see that there are so many students from different disciplines, and you can't know anything any deeper in any of these fields. So it's almost impossible. But actually, what they are concerned is to be able to express the ideas with their hand or with their mouth. in some kind of general English, and they use the language or the sense of the language to help them to express the things that they need to express in their own field. As far as the vocabulary is concerned, it's relatively simpler for them. So we don't have to really pay our attention to the content or the science knowledge. Although knowing more about science will help. So we still have to think about the laws, the regular patterns of learning English, you know, just like the linguists or applied linguists put it. We have to understand how our human brains work with the language. For example, remembering new words, what's the most effective way or the best way to teach them how to write or improve their writing ability in the short time. For instance, by providing a kind of pattern that they can all follow, students from different majors or relatively similar majors, they can follow and can use database or corpus, means like that, to find the pattern so that they can follow the pattern or even recite the pattern, and later on they can apply this pattern to the kind of article they want to submit to the international papers. So this is the technique I'm thinking about. So in this sense, and it's the same to all kinds of students of liberal arts, social sciences, or natural science. Actually, we should not make clear distinction and between the methods and the methods are involved. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so we're almost at the end of this short interview. Mm-hmm. And is there anything else about English teaching or any advice to students that may be listening? Any advice about how they can better themselves in learning English? And or any advice to any teachers listening, foreign teachers or Chinese teachers in China, any advice for them?
Well, that's a good question. And I think...
Or suggestions.
Yeah, I do have some suggestions, first of all, for the students. And I've been teaching English and this kind of job, you know, for about 20 years. Yeah, more than 20 years. I found when I was first, when I first became a teacher, and then I was about the same age with my students. Some of them are even older than I was. But, you know, it's very exciting, you know, to do the teaching. Because at that time, I've noticed the students were very, very highly motivated. They love doing this. They love learning English. So whenever we have kind of extracurricular activities and related to English, say English speech contest or any a contest of the English plays, and each class will present an English play, and the students were so enthusiastic and taking part into these activities, and they would.
When was this?
Well, it was about 20 years ago. Okay. You know, I was a student and just graduated and became a teacher. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, they even spend their own money and then borrow the costume, you know, to be on the stage.
This is in the university?
Here, just here.
Oh, this university.
Yes, yes. But as time went on, things has changed, and we see a decline, a tendency to decline. It's not so obvious, but we definitely see this decline of interest in English. And so therefore, a lot of times teachers are are teaching on the stage, you know, in front of a class. The students are kind of not sleeping. Most of them are kind of following the teacher, not even looking up. So the teacher have kind of, you know, they don't feel well, at least. And some students were doing their own things. Yeah, this get better and worse and from year to year. So we can see this drop in the interest in learning English, and because all they are concerned about is to pass the exam, and if they can pass the exam, so they're not really interested in learning English, learning, getting the ability to communicate, right? So I think there's a dramatic drop in the interest. If you compare the students now and compare to the students 20 years ago, even 30 years ago, so I think if I think of the reason or the cause for this phenomenon, is that it has to do with the motivation, right? We know there are two factors that influences the success rate of learning a foreign language. That one is from inside, which is the motivation. The other from outside, which is the environment. Okay, so we don't have the motivation. And I know this from another story. Say my daughter, recently she has a chance to go to America as an exchange student, and she doesn't have to worry about money and the certain institute will pay for her. And all she has to do is to study English hard and pass the IELTS. And if she gets 6.5, then she will be qualified to apply for this program. And so she was so highly motivated, and she had only 1 month to prepare for this test. And she was studying so hard. And eventually she got it, she made it. And she was quite happy for that. But before that, even though as a father and a professor of English, and I tried to help her and push her, she just wouldn't go. you know how strong the power is, you know, the motivation's power. Mm. Okay. And the other is the environment. And if you got the motivation, then you can create the environment for yourself. Just when I was a student, I was interested in learning English, so I created the environment. I went to the English corners. First, I was like a listener all the time, and then gradually I began to reverse the situation. I tried to hold the floor all the time. So it was not the English that I improved or I got from that English corner. It was the change from a listener to a floor holder that excited me. You know, I witnessed this process, so that was very, really exciting. And as far as the suggestion for the teachers, and I think it should be related to what I said just now, the motivation thing. I think teaching is like driving a car, a manual car, not an automatic. You want to accelerate, you can provide more oil, right? So you have to put the gear on before you press the accelerator. And so you have to communicate with the student and let them know it's useful, it's interesting, it's beneficial, and then they begin to love this thing, and then you can provide them with methods and different ways, or provide them with materials or what we call inputs. Only after this, and can these efforts be useful or fruitful. Otherwise, then you just teach and teach, and you try different methods, but they just don't care. All they care about is the score. Mm-hmm. So that's my advice about teaching.
Well, that's excellent advice.
Oh, you're welcome.
Very good. Mm-hmm. And I think that will bring us to the end of this short interview. And I hope everyone that listening can get some good information from it. And I want to thank Professor Liu Bin for doing this interview. And that will bring us to the end. And as always, you can subscribe to any of these podcasts. You can download them to your personal computer, your MP3 player, MP4 player. And as usual, you can write any comments in the podcast itself or send me an email at chinalewis@yahoo.com. And thank you, Professor. And then we will sign out with Zai Jian, everybody.
Goodbye.
Okay.